Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport. Offering service through Silver Airways with daily service from Tallahassee to Tampa and Orlando with connections to the Bahamas. Fares and information available online at silverairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to Florida's $71.8 billion hospitality and tourism industry, whose members provide over 1 million Florida jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at FRLA.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A measure allowing people to threaten the use of force if they believe they're in danger is headed to the governor, despite some last-ditch opposition.
We all know what the public is going to hear today. Two magic words the public's going to hear. And I just don't think it's responsible right now to encourage people to do warning shots.
Also tonight, a proposal to split apart Florida State and Florida A&M's engineering school is reviving bitter feelings between the two institutions that date back to the days of Jim Crow.
It's heavy on my heart today because as a black woman in this state, for one who only attended segregated schools, and this is not equality.
We'll also check in on a marathon Senate session, hear about a new high-tech car service, and follow the trail of the pillowcase burglars. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The so-called warning shot bill is headed to Governor Rick Scott's desk. The House passed the measure 2 weeks ago, and the Senate followed suit today. But as Sasha Cordner tells us, debate grew heated as some Democrats tried and failed to amend the bill.
Speaker Republican Senator Greg Evers' bill is aimed at legally allowing people to threaten the use of force when they believe they're in danger. That includes firing a warning shot, as in the case of Marissa Alexander. She is the Jacksonville woman who fired the shot during a dispute with her husband. She had initially claimed self-defense. A judge said it didn't apply, and she was sentenced to 20 years in prison under Florida's 10 and 20 life law. The law requires lengthy prison terms for felony firearm convictions, and Ever says it wasn't meant to be used in self-defense cases.
This bill fixes a problem with the inappropriate 10, 20 life sentences when law-abiding citizens are defending themselves. The current law does not regulate the threatened use of force. This bill does just that. The bill has a record expunction process for a person charged with a criminal offense, but later found to have acted out of lawful defense, self-defense.
And it's that particular provision that troubles Senate Democratic Leader Chris Smith.
If someone's innocent and found innocent, that's great. But we need to know those types of things. We need to know for future legislatures that, okay, it's been used. We passed this law and we're tracking it. This is how it's been used. This is how it's been misused. This is how it's been misinterpreted.
He says in the way lawmakers realize the unintended consequences of the 1020 life law because of several court cases, it doesn't make any sense to keep those records sealed from public viewing.
But the only way we got anything, only way we're even to have any debate is because the newspaper was able to go through court cases and track.
Still, the amendment failed, and Smith says the unamended bill will encourage people to fire warning shots.
We all know what the public is going to hear today. We all going to know that it's two magic words the public's going to hear. Warning shot.
Democrats were split on the bill, and Jacksonville Democrat Audrey Gibson says she supports the measure for several reasons, including one main reason.
It's not a fix for stand your ground, and I know that. But it does include judicial discretion, and I think that is an important element in this bill that will be helpful down the road for people of color and people not of color in this state.
But Tampa Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner says this makes her recall the time when she was in the legislature, at the time Stand Your Ground became Florida law, and she gave a warning.
I think we're opening the door for more things to happen to people in the future.
But Evers, the bill's sponsor, disagrees.
This bill, if you'll read it, does not say anything about a warning shot. What this bill does is says if you are threatened, you can use equal or threatened use of force to protect yourself. This is about self-defense. This is about the right thing to do.
And the bill passed the Senate 32-7 with Lutz Republican Senator John Legg voting alongside about half the Democrats in opposing the bill. And since the measure passed the House weeks ago, it now heads for Governor Rick Scott's signature. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Florida lawmakers are once again eyeing big changes to the state's public universities, and a few senators have set their sights on the FAMU-FSU Joint College of Engineering. It's one of the oldest partnerships between universities in the state and was created by the legislature roughly 25 years ago. But as Lynn Hatter reports, what the legislature giveth, it can also taketh away.
FAMU's Board of Trustees is struggling to understand how a plan to split the FAMU-FSU College of Engineering appeared in the legislature before they caught wind of it. Narayan Prasad, the FAMU faculty appointee to the board, says he believes one school is not telling the full story.
FSU provost would have been more forthcoming as to the necessity as to why this separation should take place.
He is referring to FSU's interim president, Garnet Stokes. FAMU lobbyist Tola Thompson says he was made aware of an amendment to the Senate's budget filed Wednesday morning by Jacksonville Republican Senator and rumored FSU presidential candidate John Thrasher that would steer an additional $3 million to the Florida State University Engineering School, though no such entity currently exists under that name. New FAMU president Elmira Mangum says she had a brief conversation with interim FSU president Stokes. Mangum says during that conversation, Stokes told her that Thrasher's plan and amendment to the budget were a surprise.
I was made aware by the interim president at FSU that this proposal was a gift to them, in essence. They didn't initiate it, but of course they're supportive of it moving forward.
FSU officials did not respond to a request for comment. FAMU has about 400 students enrolled at the school. FSU has more than 2,100. Thrasher says he believes the split would be beneficial for both schools.
But I believe these two presidents can work in good faith toward accomplishing the goals that will create an even better situation for Florida A&M University and Florida State University.
But current students at the combined school sound divided on the issue.
The combination of schools makes the culture and the atmosphere of the school more diverse.
And I'd say I'm indifferent. I think it's great what's going on here, but obviously if the students or the universities have a problem or a reason to split, I guess I'd need more information on that.
I'm in favor of FSU and FAMU splitting their College of Engineering's. I believe that FSU could bring a level of maintenance to the Call of Engineering.
I think we should, it'll be definitely do our students an injustice if we were separate, you know, because it just wouldn't be good.
Those are FSU engineering students Tatiana Brandon, Evan Fitzgerald, and Marcus Dillman, as well as FAMU engineering student Obi Akbak-Pearl. The wounds between the schools run deep. As Tampa Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner points out, the issue is larger than just starting up another program. For Joyner, who was among the last graduates of FAMU's law school before it disbanded, the current engineering proposal recalls when the legislature stripped FAMU of its law school by defunding it in 1965. The program closed in 1968.
I sat in the stack studying, and the books were removed and taken to Florida State University. I sat there as the lights were dimmed and the door closed. Someone envisioned that it would be best at Florida State.
And Miami Democratic Senator Dwight Bullard says memories of that time are still present at both schools.
As a student of Florida A&M University, you don't know how bitter it feels for a student to pass by their library door, turn the corner and see carved into the marble College of Law and know that that building does not exist.
But Thrasher is holding firm. He says the number of FSU engineering students is increasing as the number of their FAMU brethren falls. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
still to come on Capitol Report. Senators are discussing a controversial limousine measure aimed at bringing a high-tech car service to Florida.
Time marches on, and we must allow for innovation to benefit Floridians.
Lawmakers are looking for a way to stop what they call pillowcase burglars who evade law enforcement by crossing county lines.
They go into counties up and down both coasts, are committing high-dollar burglaries.
Florida has more than 100 license plate designs. Could it someday have a comparable number of sales tax holidays? And we'll hit the highlights of a Senate floor session that went on and on and on.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too, on the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
Tomorrow, a controversial measure regulating chauffeured limousines is scheduled to go before its final House committee. As Jessica Palumbo reports, the so-called Uber bill is aimed at paving the way for a high-tech car service to roll into Florida's large cities more easily.
More than 10,000 people have signed an online petition titled Move Florida Forward. Car service technology company Uber created the lobbying tool to collect support for legislation prohibiting local governments from enacting restrictions it says are keeping its cars out of those areas. The company runs a smartphone app allowing users to book limos, or black cars as they're known in the industry, at rates lower than taxi fare in many cases. When Uber enters a market, it partners with existing car services and takes a cut of all fares booked through its app. It's operating in 85 cities already.
Uber's mission is to go to every major city in the world and roll out an efficient, convenient, elegant transportation system.
That's CEO Travis Kalanick pitching Uber in a video the company posted on YouTube. As of November, Uber has been operating in Jacksonville after successfully lobbying the city council. That city removed a rule requiring limo services to book rides at least a half hour in advance, a restriction that got in the way of Uber's on-demand model. Uber public policy spokesman Jason Kintz says Miami has even more restrictions on black car providers.
First, it's a $70 minimum fare arrangement. So that means even if you're just going 5 miles down the road, it's going to cost you at least $70. Secondly, you have to have a minimum wait time of an hour. So if you're ready to go and the car arrives in 5 minutes, you have to sit there and wait 55 more minutes before you're allowed to step in that car.
Plus, he says Miami has capped the number of black cars allowed to operate. All of those restrictions would be illegal under bills sponsored by Tampa Republican Representative James Grant and St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis. Brandis's bill was briefly debated Thursday before the Senate Transportation Committee ran out of time to vote on it.
I believe this will allow for dynamic new transportation options to be offered in Florida.
Brandis says the vote will happen next week, but a couple of taxi company operators voiced their opposition Thursday.
This is just a spoiled brat, big corporation that does not want to play by the rules that are already there.
That's Gulf Coast Transportation President Rob Searcy. Roger Chapin with Orlando's Mears Transportation was also in the room but didn't get the chance to testify. He says Uber has presented a false choice and doesn't really need state intervention to come to cities like his.
It could happen without the city of Orlando getting involved. You know, they could follow the existing rules. They could come to Orlando and advocate for a change. And instead, they got upset that they were not successful in Miami and basically packed up their marbles and came to Tallahassee.
Chapin says his company would likely want to partner with Uber if the company came to Orlando. But he says his biggest issue with the legislation is taking away local control over an industry that's been regulated that way for decades. And he says taxi cabs are subject to many more regulations than luxury cars are. So if the bill passes, cabs would be at a further competitive disadvantage. The Uber debate is scheduled to continue Friday morning in the House Economic Affairs Committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
In an effort to stop so-called pillowcase burglars, lawmakers have come up with a new charge for those who cross county lines before committing crimes. That might sound like the plot of a Nancy Drew novel, but Regan McCarthy reports it's not.
A bill that passed the full House Tuesday would level an additional felony charge against those who cross county lines with the intent of committing a crime. It's a move West Palm Beach Democratic Representative Mark Pafford says sounds like a rule from the 1850s. But the case of the pillowcase burglars is one some lawmakers say they've seen in their own communities. And Naples Republican Representative Matt Hudson says he experienced it in his own home.
This touches me a little differently, and maybe it would touch you a little differently if you walked into your house and saw the pillowcases off your bed and all the stuff taken out of your house using your own pillowcases. And my law enforcement officers having no great way at all to be able to track those folks down. Why? Because they were in another county 75 miles away.
And when those burglars cross county lines, bill sponsor, Representative Charles McBurney, says that thwarts law enforcement's efforts to catch them.
They would go from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. The local law enforcement would use their local resources, but when they felt like they were coming close, they would instead go to another county or another jurisdiction.
He says that's because the officers can no longer rely on the equipment, information, and contacts they've worked to develop in their local areas. Martin County Sheriff William Snyder agrees.
Well, sure, it's very difficult. Our computers don't talk to each other. Our oftentimes our radio frequencies don't mesh one with the other. And you're moving around such tremendous volumes of information and criminal intelligence that the bandwidth is very difficult to work in those environments. And these burglars know that.
Snyder, who is a former state House member, brought the bill to McBurney for consideration this year after getting frustrated when the scofflaws were repeatedly able to evade traditional police work.
And the reason it didn't work is because they were really like ghosts, and they would appear and then disappear.
But it's unclear if tacking on another felony charge for those who cross county lines with the intent of committing certain felonies will put a stop to the burglars. Snyder says maybe, but that's not the point.
You could make that argument for every crime on the book. I mean, we still have, you know, thousands of people a year in this country are injured in DUI accidents, and the DUI's against the law. So the law has to serve two purposes. Number one, it has to set a standard for society and ask people to voluntarily comply. And then number two, in the event that you don't voluntarily comply, there has to be sanctions.
The measure passed out of the full House Tuesday with an 81-36 vote. Several lawmakers raised concerns about separating intent for opportunity. In other words, proving someone crossed county lines just to commit a crime. A similar bill in the Senate is making its way through the committee process. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Florida Public Radio, Stan Jastrzebski joins us. A lot of action was supposed to take place in the Senate today, did it?
It finally did after a two-day delay. You may remember a couple of days ago was FSU Day at the Capitol. Well, the senators decided that it would be in their interest to spend their hour and a half that they had scheduled for a bunch of legislative business saying really nice things about the Florida State football team. So all of that business at the last second got pushed off to today onto what was already a long calendar. And so today there was a 7-hour hearing scheduled in the Senate through which they had to get a lot of different bills in various parts of the process.
Well, it sounds like a legislative marathon. How did it proceed?
Well, there were a number of things that were considered that we've been talking about for some time. Listeners to this program may remember a week or so ago I did a story talking about this bill from former Senate President Tom Lee that would set out a process by which there would be a constitutional amendment, which would, of course, have to be voted on by the public, that would say, here's who's going to get to appoint judges, either the incoming governor or the outgoing governor. And just like on second hearing today, on third hearing, this had a lot of opposition from a number of Democrats. Here are just a few of them.
An incoming governor, one that was just elected, one that is closest to the people, is the one that should make these appointments.
What's to say that if the person we like is not the outgoing governor, that will not be back here looking for another fix?
It could be a Democrat or it could be a Republican. So don't assume that it's going to be a Republican, because it sure could be a Democrat. and then you're going to be stuck in a different way.
And so those were Senators Darren Soto, Geraldine Thompson, and Gwen Margolis. And it's amazing, Tom, in what they're saying, that it got so political, because on second reading, this was a bill that was talked about on its merits. And today, these Democrats seem to go right at former Senate President Lee and say, this is a bald-faced political move. And they're not the only ones who are saying it. I spoke with Martha Barnett, who was on the last Constitutional Revision Commission, and she said it's not illogical to think that this could be a move by the Republicans who are in the legislature right now to allow Rick Scott, who is getting a serious challenge in his reelection bid this year for governor, to allow him to have the potential to have a legacy if he wins reelection by naming the three Supreme Court justices who all get named and all get installed on Election Day in 2018 and then appointed in January of 2019. And one thing we actually forgot to say in that story was there's another Supreme Court appointment that comes up 2 years before then. So whoever gets elected in this November's election has the potential, if Senator Lee's bill passes, to name as many as four Supreme Court justices in Florida.
Nursing homes, some regulation there perhaps in the works.
That is possible. There was a bill that was talked about and passed through the Senate this morning. And basically what it would do is limit the liability of people who are minor partners in nursing homes. And Jeremy Ring, the senator, had an interesting thing to say, pointing out that there might be more entanglements than we think.
Our 401ks, our mutual funds may be invested in some of these big corporations. That means what? We're small, minority, limited partners in a lot of these. So does that mean we're going to get sued?
And so what he's saying there is, in this era of big business, you and me and anybody else who has a 401k plan might very well be invested in these nursing homes. And thus, if we allow anyone to be able to sue anybody who's affiliated with one of these companies or one of these individual homes, is it possible without the bill that went through today that we could get sued despite the fact we might not have any idea our mutual funds are invested in these corporations? And so he's saying, look, this is a consumer protection event that we need to be careful about, and we need to make sure that those people who are actually hurting someone in a nursing home are the ones that litigation is focused against and not the minor partners who are completely on the periphery.
A Florida Senate session that lasted 7 hours, encapsulated in just a few minutes. Good job, Florida Public Radio's Dane Jastrzebski.
Thanks, Tom.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Ronald J. Evans here with a look ahead to Friday's action at the Capitol.
Before the House Economic Affairs Committee at 9:30 Friday morning, lawmakers will consider the Aaron Cohen Life Protection Act, named after Aaron Cohen, who was killed in a hit-and-run crash. The bill requires the driver of a vehicle involved in a crash that results in bodily injury to immediately stop and remain at the scene of the crash or face a second-degree felony charge and a 3-year revocation of license. The committee will also take up a bill that calls for enhanced penalties for a person who counterfeits, clones, or alters tickets. The House Judiciary Committee also meets at 9:30 with human trafficking legislation topping the agenda. The bill includes a redefining of the term sexual abuse of a child to include human trafficking and the authorizing of the Department of Legal Affairs to provide relocation assistance to a victim of human trafficking. There's also an abortion bill that revises the circumstances under which pregnancy in the third trimester may be terminated. The measure requires physicians perform certain examinations to determine the viability of the fetus. The Senate convenes at 10 Friday morning with a long list of bills, including a measure increasing the employer contribution to the retiree insurance subsidy for members of the elected officers class. There's a bill that requires background screening of coaches of youth athletic teams. There's also a bill that establishes the Florida Tourism Hall of Fame. Those are some of the bills to be considered on Friday, April 4th. I'm Ronald J. Evans.
Finally tonight, Florida sales tax holidays have become a popular tool to encourage consumer spending on items like school supplies. But as Nick Evans reports, the omnibus tax holiday bill that passed the House today left some lawmakers asking for more.
Besides back-to-school shopping, Melbourne Republican Representative Rich Workman's bill includes temporary exemptions for energy-efficient appliances, hurricane preparedness supplies, and gym memberships. It also offers a permanent exemption for child car seats and bicycle helmets.
This is that patchwork of awesomeness we spoke about yesterday that includes all the tax holidays, it includes the temporary sales tax exemption for manufacturing equipment, it includes the bicycle helmets and car seats exemptions, and all of the goodness that we are going to give back to the citizens so they can keep more of their money.
The bill passed, but some legislators don't share Workman's enthusiasm. Tallahassee Democratic Representative Alan Williams says the back-to-school holiday should be permanent and it should run longer.
3 days is not enough. And so I would encourage all of you, especially those who are going to be around during conference, let's work hard to make sure that we expand and extend this to beyond 3 days.
In 2007, the exemption ran for 10 days, but it disappeared altogether in 2008 and 2009. Since returning in 2010, the back-to-school tax break has been limited to 3 days, although last year it was expanded to include computers worth up to $750. Another complaint focused on a change in how taxes are calculated for natural gas and electricity. Coral Springs Democratic Rep. Jared Moskowitz says this represents a tax on cities throughout the state.
Under this big guise of a sales tax exemption and giveaways and sales tax deductions is a tax increase. We are increasing taxes on every city and county that all of us represent in this entire body.
Workman's bill shifts the sales tax collected on energy to what's known as a gross receipts tax. Less money goes into the state's general revenue fund. That's the pool of money shared by the state and municipalities. It's estimated there will be about $20 million less for local governments each year, and less still for state government if the bill becomes law. But on the other hand, it's not like the money just disappears. Instead, it's placed in the PICO Trust Fund to finance public school maintenance and construction throughout Florida. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Nick Evans. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Silver Airways with daily service from Tallahassee to Tampa and Orlando, with connections to the Bahamas. Fares and information available online at silverairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to Florida's $71.8 billion hospitality and tourism industry, whose members provide over 1 million Florida jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at FRLA.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.